This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7.
And thank you for staying with us here at Power FM and Power Talk this Wednesday morning. So on Monday, The Daily Maverick, an independent online publication. In fact, they do have physical editions, published editions. But in any case, this independent media group went on what we call a shutdown. And basically, the blackout was to say, we're not producing any stories, news or analysis today because good journalism costs money. Now, regardless of whether you read The Daily Maverick, agree with them or not, the central issue here is that good journalism costs money. And this is not a problem that the Daily Maverick is facing. It is an issue across the media spectrum, commercial and public broadcast. Babi Moloi then had an interview, which was quite illuminating for me, when she spoke to William Byrd from Media Monitoring, who gave a statistic that says, in the past decade, says William Byrd, 70% of journalists have left the field of journalism. 70%, give or take. So, in other words, professionally, the sector is hemorrhaging. And experience counts for something, especially when we're talking reportage and investigative journalism or the caliber of anchors you have in current affairs. Then we also heard that the nature of news media is changing with the times, and rightly so. The rest of the world is moving into a new era of the digital media, online media, so it's fine. Trends are changing. But what it does mean, especially with the advent of social media, where anybody can pick up their phone and record an event, is that there needs to be an objective, independent way of verifying information. So fact-checking, data analysis is becoming a very important dimension of how news is covered, interpreted, broadcast, and published. And without data analysts in the back room, working through video footage, authenticating it, working through algorithms, bots, etc., you are going to have a problem of establishing the truth. But all of that technology, all of that data science and the expertise needed costs money, let alone just the simple logistics of a story breaking out in rural Northwest. A three-hour drive. Somebody's got to drive the car. Somebody's got to put petrol in the tank. And somebody's got to make sure the car is insured. So all of those things, whether we're talking the logistical side, the editorial side, the technological side, costs money. And without more investment in the media, it's going to compromise the quality of media and the quality of news and analysis you receive as listeners, viewers, and the public, and more so in an election year. Michael Markowitz is the head of the Gibbs Media Leadership Think Tank, and he joins us now. So, Michael, thank you so much for coming through. I don't really want to focus on whether the Daily Maverick was right or wrong to institute a blackout. That's their strategy. That's their thing. But it was the message. And I think the message has resonance and relevance across the media spectrum. What are your views?
Well, firstly, thank you, Lerato, for inviting me on, and good morning to your listeners. Look, I think it is a widespread problem, but it's not just a South African issue. It's a global problem. I mean, there's been widespread loss of journalist jobs across the world, leading to what some people call news deserts in some local towns, even in richer countries like the US, in many small towns that don't have a newspaper. There are many small towns in South Africa that have never had a newspaper. But I think, you know, we have to also recognize, and there's something to be proud of in South Africa, is that, you know, our media industry is worth saving for many reasons. One I'll say is obviously it's a key pillar of democracy. But to note, and this is factual, South Africa is one of the freest media in the world from a freedom of expression point of view. For instance, in 2023, the World Press Freedom Index ranked South Africa as the 25th most free media in the world, ahead of older democracies like the UK, Australia, Italy, and the US, which is actually ranked 20 places lower than South Africa at number 45. So that's something to be proud of. It's something to protect. But one thing, unfortunately, Lerato, is freedom is a necessary condition for media sustainability, but it's not a sufficient condition. Basically, having all this media freedom hasn't meant that you can just be sustainable, because the ground has shifted, as many people know, and as you described in your intro, is that the increased power of global digital platforms such as Meta and Google have definitely accelerated the sustainability crisis of news media.
All right. So if I just gave numbers right now, Michael Markovitz from Gibbs, we hear that since 2018, and in fact, between 2008 and 2018, but really it became quite prevalent and palpable in 2018, we've seen the demise, is the word used, of media organizations. Huffington Post South Africa shutting down, Finweek, the conversion of ANN7, and it's now, been taken over to form Newsroom Africa. So I guess that's not quite a demise. But all the same, shutting down of 375 community print newspapers, and the loss of key skills in newsrooms. This is a trend that we are seeing. And in as much as you say the media is an important pillar of democracy, it doesn't seem to be, justified or confirmed by these numbers, shall I say that?
I think it's very significant, if listeners are not aware, is that the problem is so acute that our Competition Commission, which is responsible for ensuring fair competition across the economy, has launched a market inquiry on media and digital platforms because there's evidence of unfair and adverse competition effects from the platforms. Everyone says, it's technological change, the media can't be rescued, other industries have been disrupted by technology, they must stop crying and just get on with it. Well, unfortunately, this is one technology change that won't lead to something better. I mean, we can all know what happened when Kodak film closed down. Well, it did lead to something better. We all got digital cameras. But when you close down media, what is it being replaced by? Well, essentially, most people, even today, already are getting most of their news mediated by social media platforms. And those platforms also dominate and control a key part of the ad business called ad tech platforms, where digital advertising is sold. So what you have here, and the think tank that I'm head of is part of a broad alliance of media organizations, including SANEF, and a range of others who made a representation to the Competition Commission saying, that there is a huge structural disadvantage compared to the platforms who are able to micro-target millions. So there is a competition problem. It's not just about, technological change and the media hasn't be kept up with the times.
All right. So even if, we could argue that the platforms like Meta, X, can be anti-competitive in the way in which they aggressively grow their subscription bases and even make people pay for it now that X is starting to tell us that. Some would say the issue is not just an existential issue. How does traditional media survive in this digital era? But it is this one issue you pointed out earlier on, which is how you balance out the freedom and independence of the media with commercial imperatives. Because even if the traditional media upholds the democratic principles of keep people informed, entertained, honest, somebody has to pay for that. And if that money is not coming this way and preferring to go elsewhere, how does the traditional media reinvent themselves whilst holding on to the principles they hold dear?
Very, very difficult, Arata. I think you summed up the challenge there. And that's why there has to be some kind of regulatory intervention. Because we've seen it in Australia and Canada, where they've introduced laws to mandate bargaining between the news media and the platforms. And while it's been contentious, they've at least tried to make a start and see if there's an intervention that can be made, because obviously, you know, just bargaining around fair compensation between the news media and these global platforms, there's a huge asymmetry of power and bargaining power, where the platforms can just simply block any requests. So there has been regulatory interventions, but, you know, often you hear people, yes, but the platforms are doing the media a big favor. You know, they're sending a lot of traffic to those news sites. Well, Larota, that's not strictly speaking true. You know, the research shows that, and I'll give you an example, in Switzerland, very recent research showed that 85% of the Swiss access news via Google News, but only 47% click back to the original publication. So what Google is getting, they're getting the snippet, they're getting the headline, and then people are satisfied, and then they stay on the platform, and then Google monetizes them elsewhere.
Yeah. Well, research also shows, Michael Markovitz, and you can verify, is that only 11 to 15% of news consumed is consumed on social media platforms. It's a good number. It's a growing number. But it does tell us that when people are looking for news, when people are saying, what's going on with Donald Trump today? What's happening in Russia today? What's happening in the election cycle campaigns in South Africa today? They don't go to social media platforms. They go to the traditional news media, albeit online, but that's where they go. They go to BBC, they go to CNN, they go to SABC, they go to ENCA. That is where they go. And yet, we are discussing here a funding crisis in traditional media, yet people still rely on traditional media for core news content.
You know, Larota, I don't know where that stat comes from, but my research says something different.
That
if you look at the social media landscape report, the majority of news is consumed via social media in South Africa. And if you look at the reasons why, one of the top reasons why people are on social media is to find out what's going on. So we don't really, in terms of the research that we've seen, is still social media is where people consume the majority of things.
Okay, so mine is from Pew Research Center in the US and also from the BBC. So maybe internationally, people still rely very much on traditional media, but increasingly are drawing those snippets from social media. And so for mine, it comes from the Pew Research Center, it comes from BBC News. So clearly what you're saying is there's a reverse trend in South Africa.
Yes, that's what the information that we've got. And that's essentially where the problem is that the traffic is not being referred back to the original publishers, and hence they're losing a lot of revenue. While the argument is, and it's obviously disputed by Google, and I must be very fair that obviously Google and Meta deny this, but there are people who say you cannot just look at the value. The big question is, what is the value of news to social media? And if one can, you know, there's much research that has been done on it, and it's obviously very debated, but that really is at the core of the issue, because once you get to that, Larota, then you can talk about fair compensation.
Okay. So I've got a comment coming through here from social media, and it's from Vusi Wekaya, who says, Lerato, in South Africa, our media firms are badly run. So underscore that term, badly run. They're not investing properly in their personnel. They're not investing properly in library archiving research. They're not investing in audience development for growth. They're the ones who've given internet companies a distinct advantage. And we rely more on the veracity of reports coming out of social media. And I want to add to that, Michael Markovitz, is that many people say anecdotally, not only do they believe South African media is badly run for all the reasons that Mvusi mentions, but they don't trust South African media because it's partisan, are often allegations that come. Is just by looking at one report on any news channel, you will know where they stand politically. You will know their ideological stance immediately.
Well, you know, I think that's arguable. I certainly think there is some truth that media companies may not have invested in their staff, as the message says. But I do think that if you ignore the structural problem that we have, the competition issue, I think you're ignoring the elephant in the room. I'm certainly not denying that that all media, whatever the case, deserves to survive whatever happens. No. I think media has to innovate. Media leadership has to improve. And that's one of the things we're focusing on at Gibbs. But I do believe that there wouldn't be an inquiry by the Competition Commission into this market if they didn't find prima facie evidence that there was competition issues to deal with. So that's really what we're talking about. Now, if people trust social media more than the original news publications, well, I would caution against that. Mm. I think that certainly to see social media, which is certainly unmoderated, there's a lot of stuff that goes on there that is not fact-checked. And as you said in your intro, Lerato, there's a lot of money that goes into the new by the news publications to check their sources. Yeah. Yes, people might have different stances. Having a political view doesn't mean you support a political party. Mm. You're entitled as a publication. Power might right. have a particular stance on certain things, but that doesn't mean to say right. it can't be trusted.
But I think it's also to do with who funds the media. Those are also conversations that are often overarching in South Africa, is that he who pays the piper plays the tune, right? So there's this view that even if stations call themselves independent, commercial, public broadcast, once you see who's advertising there, who's the ownership there, or who owns it, who has the equity there, then you start to understand which views prevail, and it shouldn't be. And so there's a sense that it doesn't matter where the money comes from, there's still a responsibility inside the newsrooms to uphold the highest forms of objectivity. But people say they don't see that here.
Well, look, you know, I think that's obviously the trust element is very worrying, because we live in an age of increased misinformation and disinformation, where we know for a fact that the biggest purveyors of that is social media. And basically, the media needs to rebuild that trust. And I think one of the ways to do that would be to disclose, to be much more transparent about who's funding it. I mean, a lot of public interest journalism, Lerato, cannot really survive without donor funding, because as you say, you know, we find it very difficult to monetize content like that, because it's expensive. It's expensive to produce investigative journalism and public interest journalism. So the solution is, if people are prepared to say, well, we can do without that, I think it's one of those cases where people might only really miss it and realize what they've lost when it's gone.
Okay.
And I think that people like us in the space who don't want to let that happen, basically.
All right. Khumutso, you've got a point?
Very short. And I don't know if I was lazy. Well, I'm lazy in thinking. I also feel like the media has become lazy. So how it is on Twitter is how it's going to be everywhere else. And I remember, Lerato, there was a time I would, like, go home from the club and buy all the papers, because I knew I would be getting different perspectives. But sometimes it feels like you're reading the same thing, or... like, did anybody even try to get what this information is about? And I don't know if anybody else has experienced that.
All right. Michael? Thanks, Khumutso. The media is lazy.
Look, I think that it's a fair comment, but what I also think that readers and listeners and viewers might not necessarily realize when they're consuming media on social media is that social media platform has absolutely no accountability, no responsibility for putting its journalists out there, risking them getting the story. They've got no accountability to a press code. Everyone who produces news is either going to be a member of the BCCSA or the press council. And so the readers can take them to get them accountable. But social media's got absolutely no liability whatsoever. So it's quite easy for them to take this content, spread it out, make huge profit margins on it, because they don't, if they had to have the same cost base in terms of fact-checking and editorial oversight that the media has, one questions right. whether they would be able to profitably use that content.
Okay, so my last comment is more anecdotal than it is research-based, okay? And this is when you look at the salary scale of top media personalities, say in the US, you know, which is a highly commercialized media. Mm. You know, you look at those salaries at CBS or at Fox News, some aspects of CNN. And then you look at how media personalities are treated in South Africa, right? And one of the disincentives for many people to stay in broadcasting are the low wages, you know, exploitative wages. Often. And history is replete with examples. I don't need to go into it. I mean, we just saw the case of the young woman at Gagasi FM last month, who was being paid 2,800 rands a month, and yet she was an online personality. And I'm not saying we must distinguish, but there's this sense that sustainability of newsrooms with great talent also requires that journalists are paid properly.
100%.
Because if you pay people properly, then you can demand higher standards of them.
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, as a general position, obviously I 100% agree with you. But what we're also getting at is that there's a fundamental structural problem with the business model for journalism, is that advertising can no longer sustain good journalism. And I think it's a very important point. The sort of most successful online news journalism business is News24. They disclosed to the Competition Commission that despite the fact they've got 100,000 subscribers and have a lot of journalists, they still are not profitable. So there's a problem there structurally. I'm not saying that justifies lower wages, but I do think that media companies don't, you know, they have dwindling revenues. And that's why, you know, they've been cutting back on journalists and certainly not investing as much, which maybe they should have done in the past. There's no argument with that. But I do think there is a problem in the business case because of competitive pressures. And yes, it's a multifaceted problem. It's complex. But if we ignore that elephant in the room, that the business case for quality journalism is no longer supported by digital advertising, we have to look at other solutions and interventions.
Thank you so much. It's been enlightening. Michael Markovitz, who's the head of the Gibbs Media Leadership Think Tank, for joining us this morning. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.